Welcome to the REM Breakdown. Hey, it's JD here, and I'm joined as always by Rico Borrego to discuss the work of influential American band REM. Every week, we'll explore a different song in the band's catalog, working through the discography in chronological order to better understand just why this four-piece band is considered so seminal, innovative, and downright awesome. So there's that. Talk to me, Rico. How the hell are things going?
Oh, going good. This last week here, I tried to prep for this episode, tried to go outside and do a little gardening. Except it's winter, and everything is dead.
So what's winter like in Sacramento?
You know, it's not bad. It's pretty, like, it's not cold. Like, it doesn't ever really get cold. Even at night, it's still pretty, like, you know, we don't really get frost. We don't get snow. And we can be getting a little bit more rain than normal, which me originally being from Washington State, I'm used to that.
Right.
But no, it's still, and I think like next week we're creeping up into the high 60s, low 70s.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, even though it's only, you know, it's still winter here, it's already going to start warming up. No gardening, unfortunately. Not even cutting the grass. We have an orange tree, pick some oranges, but that's about it.
You have an orange tree?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, man. When I lived in L.A., we had a banana tree.
Oh, nice.
Until the monkeys came. Oh, that used to be one of my stand-up jokes. Yeah. You can tell why I don't do stand-up anymore.
A lot of them, I see a lot of lemon trees too, though, here.
Oh, yeah?
Lemons, limes.
Oh, man. Citrus on trees. That's fucking great.
Which somehow connects to this episode, I think.
Yeah, you've sort of given it away. And I mean, the title of the episode is going to give it away as well. But we're talking about gardening at night today. So pretty exciting. This is one of my favorite songs on Chronic Town. Probably my
for me.
Probably my favorite song. Yeah.
Maybe I can Radio. Totally see why.
Oh, no. Radio Free Europe's not on it. Yeah. Duh. what's your favorite?
I think our last episode, Wolves Lower.
Okay.
But yeah. this is like, song. This would be clear number two. Like, it is close.
Yeah.
To me, this is the other really standout track from the CP.
I think I have those inverted. For me, this is one, yeah. And Wolves Lower would be two. But it's 1A and 1B. You know what I mean?
I can see that. And I think this way because, for me, this song, we'll get into it a little later, I'm sure, is kind of like a segue into another song off Murmur. It has a very similar style to another song that I think they do a little better on Murmur.
Oh, wow.
They're not identical, but I just feel like this song is like a precursor to that song.
Interesting. I can't wait till we get there.
But Gardening at Night is a classic for their early stuff.
Absolutely. When you think this is on their first release and it sounds so mature.
Yeah. I mean, the songwriting, especially on this song, as we'll get to, like, is actually a little bit more complex than some of the stuff on Murmur, even.
Talk to me.
I think this song, you get, like, you have an intro, you have verses, you have a chorus, simple chorus. Then you have a post-chorus, which online some people consider it a bridge, but it happens more than once, so I consider it a post-chorus. It happens after.
Yeah, you know? A bridge is once.
And then there's even like a bridge, an actual bridge, after like the last chorus where it sounds different than the intro and it sounds different than the post-chorus, but it's super short and it segues back into that intro. So it kind of bookmarks, you know, the intro happens at the beginning and at the end. And you know, I think on a lot of songs on Murmur, they're a little bit more simple. They're kind of more just like verse, chorus, they'll hold out that chorus. They'll make you wait for it. But yeah, the song, it has a lot of energy. It has like the same amount of energy as Wolf's Lower, but this song has a much wider bounce to it. It doesn't sound as dark, not as aggressive.
Makes you want to dance.
Yeah. Kind of in a similar way that Radio Free Europe does.
Yeah, I can picture like jumping up and down to this song, you know,
yeah.
I was 11 when this came out. So maybe not. No, I wasn't even 11. I was 8. Yeah. So I wouldn't have been.
I wasn't alive. So. Up and down. I did zero jumping.
So what do you know? What do you know?
Well, I think the most important thing to note, Michael has gone on record saying that he feels that this is the first real song the band wrote.
I've heard that as well. Yes.
He says after, you know, multiple failed attempts, they finally were able to get this song that he considered to be their first real piece of music.
Isn't that wild?
What else is crazy, too, is that so the song was written in June of 1980, supposedly on a mattress in the front yard of a church in Athens.
I read that. What the hell is that about?
Church. Yeah, I guess. Which, when we dive into the lyrics, I think the church might have some inspiration to the lyrics themselves.
Oh, wild.
And
so I can just envision Michael Stipe like writing lyrics on a mattress. Like,
yeah.
Like, so weird.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you know, the band, they weren't, you know, they were barely a band at that point. Like, people aren't going to like know them and recognize them. So,
right.
But it's kind of interesting imagery to think about, you know, as someone who's never been to Athens, like I don't really have a picture in my mind, but it's funny to read things like that, like just on a random mattress in the front yard in front of a church, you know?
I wonder if it just struck him, like it just, the lyrics came to him and he had to get them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because when you go like to the song itself, I've read a ton of theories about what the song's about. Some people think it's about his dad. Some people think it's about drugs. Some people think it's actually about gardening in the night. Like,
yes,
you know, and Michael's gone on record saying that it's all of those things. Yeah.
All of them. Yeah. I don't get the drug one. I don't really get that.
I mean, maybe the lines about like the payphone or something, but, I do wonder if there is a little bit of truth to it being about his dad, though, because when the band were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007, This was one of the songs they played, and he dedicated it to his dad before they played it. Yes,
that's right. And they were inducted in 2007, right?
Yeah. I think it was Eddie Vedder who inducted them, if I recall.
Oh, that's
He definitely
fair.
Was there and did Man on the Moon with them.
Oh, man.
I would pay so much money to, you know, have been there, even just a fly on the wall. But I do think maybe it's about his dad, but at this point too, Michael was very like, he didn't want to give the songs away, like what they were about.
Well, there is still some mumble to this song as well, right?
For sure. Yeah. Especially the version on Chronic Town.
Right.
Because I'm going to get to it a little bit later. There's like 4 different versions of the song.
I read that as well. And I've tracked them all down.
I've tracked them all down. I've listened to them all.
Damn.
And I actually don't think my favorite version is the one on Chronic Town. There's another one I prefer.
Really?
Yeah.
You'll have to get me my hands on that and we can play them both in this episode, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could probably get you all 4 of them, really. That might be a little too much. I don't know. You might want to play maybe just clips of some of the other ones. Because I'll just say now, there's 4 main versions. There's this one on Chronic Town, right?
Yep.
Then the one on Eponymous, they're kind of like greatest hits of the IRS years.
That's right. One
has a completely different vocal take. Where on this version, on Chronic Town, he sings in like almost like a head voice. Like it's not quite falsetto, but it's kind of higher.
It's definitely a higher register.
Unique. Even for Michael at that time, it's kind of different.
Yeah.
And he would return to that style more in, you know, later albums, but it's definitely different than anything else on even this EP. But the one on Eponymous, he's singing it like they would sing it live, where he's singing it like very loud and like how he sings Radio Free Europe or Wolves Lower.
Right.
You can make out the lyrics better.
Oh.
And the mix is different too. Even though online, there's no claim that The only claim is that the vocal take is different, but the mix is different too. There's less percussion. Actually, there's more percussion in the eponymous version. There's like an extra like tambourine in the verses.
Okay.
And the guitars in the that post-chorus are mixed totally differently. They're a little like scaled back. And I kind of prefer it that way. I do think the production on Chronic Town is definitely a little bit more outdated than the production of the version on Eponymous.
Are they both produced by Mitch Easter?
That
is
actually,
one like a demo?
That one I don't know. I mean, I know he did the one on Chronic Town, but I don't know who did the different mixes on Eponymous, because there's actually the Eponymous has a ton of different versions of songs. Like the Finest Work song, there's horns in the Eponymous version.
Yeah.
But I don't know if like for that one, I don't know if Scott Litt was the one that added them in afterwards or what.
Right.
Now there's also a version of Guardian of Night where it's acoustic. And that
I have
was
not heard that.
That one was a bonus song on the European reissue of Dead Letter Office.
Holy shit.
Which I don't own. I just have like the normal Dead Letter Office, but it's an acoustic version, and it sounds like it's just Michael and Peter Buck on an acoustic guitar, and that's it. There's one more. Okay. They have a compilation called And I Feel Fine.
That's right.
And there's a version of there, and this one is like labeled as a demo, where it's the electric version, but it's slowed down. And I just don't mean like, you know, we talked about Radar for Europe having a slower tempo and Loaves lower as well. Yeah. This one is like not by just a couple, you know, beats. It's like totally slower. It's like as slow as the acoustic version. It's like a completely different sounding song, but it's the exact same like chords and instrumentation. You know, it's electric guitar, it's bass, it's drum, but it's slow. Like the tempo is just like not even close to the version we know today. So my favorite, though, is the eponymous one just because of the vocals.
Okay.
But the acoustic one is very interesting, too, because it is just vocals and acoustic guitar. And the acoustic is mixed very nicely. It's got like a little reverb. It sounds like a studio version. It doesn't sound like a live version.
Okay.
So.
Well, if you can get me those tracks, let's listen to all four.
Yeah.
Why not?
I do think this is one of the more important songs when it comes to their earlier work, especially, pre-Murmur.
Right.
The song was played 245 times live. It was their 25th most played live song of their career.
Well, it's a hit, right? Like it's a hit before they were able to make hits. I mean, Chronic Town only moved 20,000 units. I don't mean only, because 20,000 units for an EP for a debut band is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to me that like I consider this song like a single and a hit, you know?
Yeah, and they didn't really have singles for this EP.
No.
I mean, it was just, you know, Radar for Europe, the first single, and then this. And yeah, they had a music video for Wolves Lower. But some of these songs just became fan favorites that even after Murmur, people were still wanting to hear Gardening at Night and wanting to hear Wolves Lower and, you know, Boxcars and all those other songs. So, yeah, it feels like almost like a cult classic where, like, yeah, it didn't sell huge, like you said, but, you know, it's considered one of their best. And understandably, I think Gardening at Night, it's so fun.
Agreed. Well, before we listen to the songs, why don't you tell the story about why it's called Gardening at Night?
Yes. You know? So, and I think it's for the I Feel Fine compilation. Bill said that they were driving, I believe, from a gig. Yep. And he had some passengers in his car, and one of them told him to pull over because he had to do some night gardening, which was slang for taking a piss on the side of the road. You know, they're nowhere near, you know, where they can use a restroom. And he's just like, yeah, I got to do some, you know, night gardening.
That's spectacular.
And yeah, that's supposedly, you know, he said that that's all you really needed to start a song was just like a phrase like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Peter went on to say the song, he said, basically a metaphor for the uselessness of everything. But if you didn't get that, I'm not surprised. It's kind of a confused song. Which is kind of the perfect way to sum it up, because besides that, knowing what, you know, why the song has that title, none of the other lyrics really make sense.
No.
Like, again, you can kind of see where it might be about his father. You can kind of see there's some church imagery. But yeah, there's no like running, you know, dialogue narrative to the song.
Totally agree, man. Totally agree. Well, what do you say we get into the breakdown? But before we do that, we give this song a spin.
Sounds perfect.
All right, cool.
Well, that was Gardening at Night. JD, what do you like when you first heard the song? What did you think? I'm very curious.
Well, the core, like my first thoughts are the chorus is the hook, you know, like there's a really great hook with the chorus. That melody is infectious and sticks with you. But beyond that, I love the first 32 bars of this song, you know, like, I love that intro guitar, you know, what is it? Four times he plays through.
Very clean sounding guitar.
Very clean sounding guitar.
Oh, well, there's even the little, the very first intro where it's like the picking out where he does the dun 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 dun, you know, that part.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I love the punctuation of the drums right before Michael Stipe breaks into the first verse. Like, I love that. I love that build up, you know, like, yeah. It's like, and then you get into that first verse and you're trying to figure out just what the fuck it is he's saying, because he's like dragging phrases into another phrase. Like, this song, I do a lot of karaoke, and I can imagine seeing this at a karaoke bar and just being blown away if somebody could sing it. You know what I mean? Because it's such a weird cadence. It's such a weird phrasing. It's just bonkers.
Yeah. And like we were saying, especially the way his voice, like, mm-hmm. it's in a higher register, but it's not full falsetto.
No. No. It's not like, oh God, I can't think of the song on Monster.
Oh, Tongue.
Tongue, yeah.
Yeah, where that whole song, he's in that falsetto register, basically.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do every now and again play REM on guitar.
Yeah.
But I really don't do a lot of their early stuff, because it is hard to get that energy on just like an acoustic guitar. Like, they have some songs where you can acoustic guitar and just vocals is great, but
right.
This early stuff, it's really hard to nail the energy that, you know, comes out of these songs.
Well, like you say, it's not just straightforward chords, right? Like, it's this jangly sound that Peter Buck is so known for, you know, and the band ultimately is known for, you know?
And I'm glad you brought up the word jangle, because I wanted to mention in this song, because, you know, Wolves Lower, you know, we talked about in the last episode, it has some of that jangle, it had the arpeggios, but that one felt like more of a fierce rock song. This definitely has that jangle, that, you know, birds sounding, you know, guitars.
Oh, that's a great comp. The birds. Yeah.
This song especially, like, and what I like it too about, like, this song is, you know, the very beginning, you have that really short, clean guitar picking riff.
Yeah.
You know, Bill's drum, you know, to kind of start getting energy in the song. Some bass harmonics from Mike. And then, like you said, you get to that part where it's the really fast chord changes.
Yeah.
And that, to me, reminds me of a little bit. I won't get into it too much this episode, but kind of reminds me of, like, the intro of Sitting Still off of Murmur.
Oh.
And I kind of feel like this song was, like, the prototype for that song. Just in the feeling of the chords. And, like, especially the two, this song, like, and both songs, like, the chords and the bass line have this kind of descending thing going on.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da-da, kind of that thing going on, which kind of gives it, like, a post-punk feel. But it's not angry. It's very, it's like birds. Like, if the birds played faster tempoed songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. If they had been around in the post, you know, post-punk, it's not post-new wave. Like, this is still new wave going on at this time. Very interesting.
And I really like, you know, Peter Buck, his dynamics, because in the verse, like you said, he's doing, like, just the chords, right?
Yeah.
But you have Mike playing, his bass is almost playing like the melody. And then when you get to that post-chorus, that's when Peter starts doing the arpeggios. And that's where there's kind of some more nuances in the song. And there's some guitars in this version of the song, on the Chronic Town version, where, like, there's definitely multiple guitars in that post-chorus. You hear, like, on the right channel, like, Peter's arpeggios, but then you kind of hear these, like, phasey guitars too. I don't know if you really noticed that in the post-chorus. There's definitely some additional guitars going on that helps fill out the sound, and there's way less of that in the eponymous version. And that's the version I'm more used to.
Right.
You know, because eponymous was, like, my first introduction to their IRS years, their first couple albums, you know.
Gotcha.
So When I really was digging into the Chronic Town versions of these songs, I was like, oh, wow, these guitars sound a lot different.
Right.
I don't even know how to explain the tones to them, but it gives great textures in the song and it details. Like you said, like this, the song is simple if you just give it a quick listen, but if you really listen in for the, finer details, they're there.
Who's doing the backup vocals on this? Is it Michael Stipe doubled?
I think so.
That's what I thought too.
And I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought that, because I didn't want to come on here because I did some research and I couldn't really figure it out. Live it'd be Mike, but
right, yeah,
it sounds, because they're very brief on the song. It's not like Radio for Europe. It's really only, I think, during like the second or third time he sings.
It's the third time through. It's the third time through. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's
sort of
doubled up,
delayed. Yeah. This delay, sort of like maybe milliseconds.
Yeah.
You know, delay.
I think it is his own vocals. Yeah, I don't think it's Mike. I thought maybe it was Bill at first because he would do some backing vocals on these early albums, but no, yeah, I think it's Michael.
Hmm.
Which is interesting because you know, Murmur be known for Mike, in those harmonies.
That's right.
But they're not quite harmonies in this song. You know, it's really kind of Michael driven, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
I do want to point out when it comes to the guitar.
Yeah.
Peter said he was actually inspired by Neil Young's song Cinnamon Girl.
Oh.
For really? Its double drop D tuning. But on Gardening a Night, he doesn't drop both his E's to D, only the high E, which gives us this kind of droning sound in a good way, not in a bad way, where when he's playing his like riffs and his chords, it just makes the song sound more full.
Interesting.
But it's weird because, Neil Young, Cinnamon Girl, both his E strings are tuned down to drop D. But for this song, it's just his high E.
Wow.
And I don't know. Later down the road, they would actually play at Neil Young's Bridge School benefits. And
yep.
There's a great version of Country Feedback with Neil Young. But you wouldn't expect Neil Young to be an influence on these early songs.
Well. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. I'm just thinking of like some of those earlier Neil records. Like before Crazy Horse for sure. Yeah, I don't know.
It is very interesting. Like when I read that, I was, because like I said, I don't play the song on guitar, so I actually looked up people doing guitar tutorials and you can play it without dropping down your high E string to D, but that's how he plays it live. And he plays, there's another song too, I think, 9-9 on Murmur, okay, where it's the same tuning. So when they would play either song live, they would do both of them together.
Okay.
So that way he didn't have to switch out the guitars,
Right.
And if you want another fun fact,
I do.
This is going to be not as beneficial to our, listeners, because this is an audio only podcast, but on the
Rico's holding up a vinyl right now.
Yeah. And you're probably not going to see it. I probably should. It says, I'll read it here. It says all songs published by Night Garden Music.
That's right. That's right. They started their production label. And they called it, yeah, Night Gardening. Yeah.
Very, and it,
very funny.
Remain like on the inside label of their vinyl records until I think Green, where they actually started posting it like on the CD, like the spines, I think. That's what.
Okay.
I used to have all their CDs, but when I moved, I decided I wasn't going to collect CDs anymore, just vinyl. So
yeah. And you've got a great vinyl collection behind you.
Thankfully again, I have.
People can't see it, but it's a great looking collection.
I thankfully have an original copy of Chronic Town because I read that and I was like, is that true? And I pulled mine out and was like, oh, yep. You could read it for yourself right there. So
wild.
That was just also like another cool little fact about the song. And then, looking at the lyrics, we mentioned before at the beginning of this episode that, they started writing the song on a mattress outside of a church. Which is funny because their first gig was at a church. Not that same church, but at a different church.
Okay.
I think St. Mary is in Athens. But going through the lyrics of the song, there's some lines that, you know, here in the post-chorus, he sings, call the prayer line for a change.
Yeah.
And I, you know, not growing up at this time, I didn't know this, but doing some research, there used to be prayer lines that you could call and they would charge you.
I did not like 976 numbers.
Yeah.
967 numbers. I forget what it was. There was a time in the 80s and 90s where there was lots, like anything that was a paid number was 967 or 976. I forget what it was. If you're listening to this and you're screaming at us right now, send us an email.
Yeah.
And tell us what it really was.
So, you know, the prayer line kind of made me think of like the church themes. And then in the second verse, he sings, we echoed up the garage sound, but they were busy in the rows. And I'm thinking of that as like them, you know, I think of that as like an autobiographical line where, you know, they're learning these songs and playing these songs like in the garage and stuff. And when I think of like the rows, I'm thinking of like the pews at like a church.
Interesting. Oh, wow. Okay.
Especially since their first gig was at a church.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So again, I don't know how much that actually has to do, you know, with the song, but you know, that's just trying to make sense of these lyrics. That's as much as I could get.
Well, it's interesting because we get this sort of roadmap from Michael Stipe saying it's about drugs, it's about my dad, and it's about gardening at night.
Yeah.
It's about all of those things. And so then you're left pouring through the lyrics to try and determine. Like for me, it's not till the third verse, the third verse, where I think that's about his dad, when it's your sister said that you're too young.
Yes.
They should know that they've been there twice. The call was 2:51. Like, I wonder if he got a call at 2:51 from his father's sister saying that his father had passed or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there's a song on Murmur about his sister too. I don't know. It might be Sitting Still now that I think about it. And it's very interesting because reading people's responses online to the song, some people thought that line where he says the call was 2:51.
Yeah.
People thought that meant that he was charged $2.51.
Oh, okay.
Because they thought it still had to do with the previous verse where you're saying about the prayer line.
Oh, the prayer line. Okay.
But yours actually kind of makes more sense to me now because, yeah, he kind of changed the direction of the song with bringing in his sister and...
Yeah. It's more familial.
Yeah. So it's a, you know, lyrically, it's a weird song.
Yeah.
But... Man, it was a fan favorite. They played it a ton live. There was a period where they wouldn't play some of these earlier songs. But I remember when I did this for Song of the Week on the REM Reddit, someone said that they went to a show in the 90s and they played the song live and it was the first time in like 10 years that they had played that song.
Oh my God. So they took a big break from it.
Yeah. And then they would though, like, I'm probably going to bring this up every episode, but that great Live at the Olympia CD, they were doing some of these Chronic Town songs and Gardening at Night is one of them. And again, that's one of my favorite live versions of the song.
Well, I feel like I read that there's 6 or 7 live versions available to be heard.
Mm-hmm. There's like, I think a concert when they reissued Murmur that has the song, the Live at the Olympia that I mentioned. There's a lot. You can go to any streaming service and just type in Gardening at Night, and you're going to find those versions, as well as those other versions of the studio versions that we talked about. The acoustic, slowdown, alternative vocal take.
I think
they're all worth a listen. Like, if you like this song, listening to all of those versions, I think is worth your time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Well, anything else to say about Gardening at Night, Rico?
No. I mean, I think that about does it. I mean, there's a lot of history and there's a lot of, you know, meanings you can pull from the song. But I think the most important thing is that, like, this is one of their early classics and, you know, a fan favorite. And you know, one of your favorites. Yeah. And, you know, it's up there for me too in their early stuff. So
cool.
I definitely think this song, there's more to pull from than maybe the next couple, but yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what we take from these next couple, because I think you start getting into a little bit more uncharted territories, you know?
Right, right. Well, that's all we've got for this week. On behalf of Rico, this is JD saying blink your eyes and we'll be back. Thanks for listening to the REM Breakdown. You can find more information at rembreakdown.com. Email us at therembreakdown@gmail.com. And hey, we're social. Find us at REM Breakdown. Podcasts and such.